I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. In 2017, Maryland had 88 wineries. Now there are 94. Roughly 1,000 acres of Maryland soil are dedicated to grapes for local wines that are sold in more than 800 stores and restaurants. Move over, Northern California and New York State. Maryland has arrived as a place where vineyards and wineries are thriving. Today on Midday, Al Spohler, the co-host of Cellar Notes, and the author Regina McCarthy talk about the rich history and future of Maryland wine. And if we're drinking locally, we can eat locally too, of course. A symposium in Harford County next week aims to connect farmers and consumers with an interactive map that helps people find the best spots for local produce. Dr. Sharon Stowers explains when Midday starts right after these headlines. Thanks, Andy, and thanks to everybody who has made a contribution in this, our penultimate day of the spring membership campaign. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, we're going to have conversations about eating and drinking locally. We've known for some time now how easy it is to go from farm to table here in Maryland. It's also pretty easy to go from vineyard to table as well. There are 94 licensed wineries in the state of Maryland. 94. That's 14 more than we had just 2 years ago. So are you ready to say goodbye to your favorite French Sauvignon Blanc or your trusted California Cabernet in favor of local wines instead? Al Spohler, along with Hugh Sisson, is the host of Cellar Notes here on WIPR. He has also organized state wine competitions, the Governor's Cup and the Comptroller's Cup, for some 20 years. Good to see you, Al.
Hi, how are you doing, Tom? Great to be here.
Thank you for coming. And Regina McCarthy joins us as well. She's the author of the book Maryland Wine, A Full-Bodied History. She's also the director of client services at the Vineyards at Doden in Davidsonville. She holds a Level 3 award in wine that's designated by the internationally accredited Wine and Spirits Education Trust. Sounds impressive, Regina.
Thanks, Tom. It's a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, great. So what's involved in getting a Level 3 award in wine? I mean, that's a BFD, as we used to say in junior high.
Lots of note cards and studying. Yeah. the very difficult task of tasting a lot of wines, but it's a really great program designed to train industry folks up to really learn about wines of the world. So it was a big, difficult test, and I'm glad it's over.
Yeah, I bet. Well, congratulations. So Al Spohler, I mean, the fact that in the last just 2 years, 14 new wineries have come on the scene, I mean, that seems to indicate that this is a growing business here.
Oh, it sure is. And I think something may have opened up this morning. I don't know.
Right.
popping up all the time. I mean, seriously, every time I see Kevin Addicks, who's the director of the Maryland Wineries Association, I say, how many, Kevin? And he has to think, and he say, it's just like three or four more than we had last time. So they're really popping up, and it's amazing because it wasn't so long ago that we just had about 10. We bumped along for a long time with just 10 wineries in the state. And then all of a sudden, a Black Ankle came along, which I refer to as the tipping point.
And they when was that? That's like
about 2005.
Years ago? Yeah,
something like that.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And they probably started, you know, the whole bit a few years before that. But let's say 2005.
And where is Black Ankle located?
Oh, that's in Frederick County.
In Mount Airy.
Mount Airy, mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful place. And they have a fabulous tasting room. I mean, it's just as good as anything you'd see in California. They showed what could be done. And what could be done was really, really exciting. And a lot of the wineries, the people that wanted to start wineries, looked at Black Ankle and said, well, that's inspirational. You know, we can do some good work. And indeed, a lot of good work has been done.
Yeah. And Regina McCarthy, for a guy like me and many of our listeners who, you know, enjoy wine kind of casually, don't know a whole lot about it, kind of know what we like, that kind of thing. Let me ask a very simple question. There's a difference and a distinction between a winery and a vineyard. What is that distinction?
Great question. So when you think vineyard, you can think agriculture. So the vineyard is actually the farming of wine grapes. The winery is the structure where the grapes are turned into juice, which is then turned into wine. So you can have one without the other, and often you see them together.
So the 94, are they a combination of vineyards and wineries? Are most vineyards also wineries? Do they smush them and bottle them in the same place?
So here in Maryland, that number of around 100 licenses includes wineries that do include vineyards and wineries that don't include vineyards. But what we're seeing is a tremendous growth in actual acreage planted here in Maryland, which is what is so exciting for us, because we're starting to see what our terroir is here and what Maryland can offer in terms of grapes and wine.
And Al Spohler, the national press seems to have been undergoing something of an awakening about
Maryland. Yeah, they are starting to take notice of it. For instance, Old Westminster was in the top 100 wines in America last year with their really exciting sparkling wine they call Petiot Naturel. Which is
and that's a particular way of processing.
It's a way of making a sparkling wine that harkens back to the way the peasants used to do it. So it doesn't go through all the complexities of making champagne. It kind of goes halfway there, but it's such a delightful wine. And I know that they're selling it in California. Drew Baker went out there and actually got some of his wine put on restaurant wine lists. So it's really tremendous.
Yeah, there's a website called jamessuckling.com, mm-hmm. which I guess is very respected in the wine business.
Indeed.
And 19 different wines from Maryland were scored as outstanding.
Yeah, isn't that something?
That's a lot. That's really
cool.
Yeah.
It is. You know, when we have 94 wineries, a lot of them are pretty new. And it takes a lot of work to become expert at winemaking. You rarely do it right off the, right out of the box. But so many of them, I'm thinking of Port of Leonardtown in particular, in just a few years have become so good. Crow on the Eastern Shore makes such good wine. They've only been doing it for just a few years. Old Westminster is probably the most stunning example, and Big Cork, I should add. Stunning, stunning wines. And any wine region in the world would be proud of some of the wines that are coming out of Maryland.
Yeah, and it's cool that some of the local vineyards then are getting up to speed pretty quickly. So, Regina McCarthy, there isn't a state in the Union, as I understand it, that doesn't have at least one vineyard. So it's no longer just in the purview of, California and New York. I went to school in upstate New York, and there were a bunch of wineries around there. So what is there anything in particular about the soil, the temperature, the climate in Maryland? And I would imagine that even in our relatively small state, there's some variation between soil and climate from, the western part of the state to the eastern and the southern, et cetera.
Yeah, so there is wine made all over the world. What we're seeing in the Mid-Atlantic is as Al mentioned, a more serious focus on making high-quality wine that is meant for the table. What I have seen across Maryland is that, they call us America in miniature. And that's true from the wine perspective as well, because we have more mountainous regions in the western part of the state, what we refer to as the Piedmont in Baltimore and Harford counties. Southern Maryland has its own climate and soil types, and then the Eastern Shore is quite different as well. But what I love about Maryland from a grape growing perspective is that we have beautiful weather in September. You know how amazing it's warm, sunny days, nice, cool nights. That is magic for grape ripening. So we're looking at really balanced ripening opportunities where the grapes are physiologically ripe and also the sugars are getting ripe in a very balanced way.
And is that balance, is that nice weather, tend to go throughout the entire state, the mountainous regions, the Eastern Shore, et cetera?
Yeah, we see it. The big risk for us in Maryland is hurricanes, but I'm of the perspective that it's more interesting to grow grapes in challenging locations. So a hurricane here or there adds a little excitement.
So, Al, let's talk about a couple of the local vineyards and some of the wines that you'd like to recommend. Are there things that, immediately come to mind?
Well, I've been so impressed with Old Westminster. They've been around for about 8 years or so, and it's a great story. It's three kids, a brother and two sisters, and when they were in their very early 20s, they decided, after talking it over with their parents, that they were going to go into the wine business. Mr. Baker, the dad, I think he was in construction and a developer, and he got behind the kids doing it, and they went out.
So it did not come from ancestry that were, steeped in the
wine-making
process.
No, not at all.
Interesting.
They had to go out, and they got jobs at wineries all over the United States and learned their craft, and came back to the Westminster area, planted the vineyard, built the built their winery and made contacts with growers all over Maryland, and right off the bat started making fabulous wine. I will never forget the first Chardonnay they ever made, which just knocked my socks off. It was just amazing. So Lisa Hinton, who is the winemaker, is, I think, one of the most talented people on the East Coast.
And that's the same vineyard that produces this Petnat, as you call it, Petnat Natural.
Yeah.
So that's not, I mean, that's maybe a specialty of theirs, but they also—
Oh, they do all sorts of things, yeah. And including putting wine in cans. They're very, very forward thinking.
In cans, is that blasphemous?
Wine in cans. Not anymore.
Yeah, evidently. Yeah. Wow. Is that's a fairly new thing. Yeah.
It is very new. It's very new. And they have a lot of wines that go into cans, and the quality is very good. Cans are convenient. You can take it on a boat or something, take it on a picnic, and it works. You got to remember, though, that it's not like drinking soda. it's about two full glasses.
Yeah, don't chug it. Yeah.
Don't try to kill a six-pack of wine in cans.
That's interesting, Regina, because I've talked to folks who are in the beer-making business, and there still seems to be a raging argument as to whether or not beer tastes better out of a can or a bottle. So now the wineries are jumping into the can fray. That's wild.
I suppose you can always pour it into a glass, too. So that,
one
of the very fun parts about making wine in America is that we don't have the rules and traditions that we see in more traditional wine producing regions. So there's so much experimentation. There are wineries that are going in very classical directions. There are wineries that are trying new things, trying very old things. So there's a huge variety of styles of winemaking here in Maryland.
We have a caller. Sharon's on the line from Owings Mills. Sharon, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm calling because I want to put in, I guess you could say, a plug for a local winery that I've been going to. They have festivals certain times of the year, and one of them is a medieval festival in August. They're called Royal Rabbit,
mm-hmm.
and they're the only one that I've seen in the area that makes a really, really good apple mead, the apple honey wine, and I usually don't find that around locally or in other wineries that I've been to, but they make a really good one, and their other wines are very tasty and very creative.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks for the tip, Sharon. And so the Rabbit, or the Royal Rabbit
yeah.
Winery there up in Parkton. What is mead, Al, in terms of wine? Is that closer to wine or beer?
It's fermented honey.
That's right.
Yeah, fermented honey.
Yeah, yeah. And you can add all sorts of flavor adjuncts into it and have a lot of fun. There's a few people that make mead in Maryland, and it always shows up at the Governor's Cup competition.
And that's a competition that you run. That's a statewide competition mm-hmm. only for Maryland
wines.
That's
right. The meads are actually quite good, but they really do have a kind of a Renaissance festival character to them.
For some reason, I always thought of mead as being closer to beer than to wine. Am I incorrect?
Yeah, it's closer to wine.
Interesting. Yeah. It does have that Renaissance.
So it does.
You want to have a turkey leg in one hand and and a mug of mead in the other. Yeah. And Regina, I understand that there are 10 wine trails in Maryland,
right.
And we're going to have a link to them on our website. That sounds mildly dangerous. I mean, like if you're walking around with your can of wine, you know, slugging down the wine and walking in the forest. I don't know. Hike responsibly, right?
That's right. So as the industry has grown over the past several decades, wineries have grown in clusters around the state. So there's a trail on the Eastern Shore. There's a trail in Southern Maryland. There are 10 of them all over the state. And the idea is that you can go visit a number of wineries in one day, of course, responsibly with a designated driver and lots of breaks and water and lunch in between. My advice is always to call the winery in advance, make sure they're open, make sure that you know their operating hours. But it's a great way. And Maryland Wine Month is a great time to go visit those wineries.
And we are in the middle of Maryland Wine Month as we speak.
That's right.
It's March. Very
That's
good.
Right.
Regina McCarthy is the author of Maryland Wine, A Full-Bodied History. Al Spoler is a wine critic and the longtime co-host of WIPR's Cellar Notes. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to take a quick break, in which we want to take a minute to remind you that we are just one day away from the end of our spring membership campaign. Here's Andy Bienstock to tell you how you yourself can get in on all the action. Thanks, Andy. And thanks again to everybody who's made a contribution to WIPR in our spring membership campaign. We very much appreciate it. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, it's Midday at the Movies with our movie mavens Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post and Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will have a review of Frankenstein at the Cohesion Theater Company here in Baltimore. Coming up a little later today, a conversation with Dr. Sharon Stowers. She's the first ever scholar in residence at Harford Community College. We're going to talk about an event that will chronicle the rich history of farming and land stewardship in Harford County. But now, back to our conversation about ideas for serving local wines with all of those locally sourced dinners that you're going to be making as the spring harvests start coming in. My guests are Al Spohler, the host of WIPR's Cellar Notes, and Regina McCarthy. She's the author of Maryland Wine, A Full-Bodied History. If you'd like to join our conversation and give your vote for your favorite local wine, our phone number here at Midday, different from the number you call to make a contribution in the spring membership campaign, 410-662-8780. You're welcome to send us an email as well, midday@wipr.org, and you can drop us a tweet, too, at Midday WIPR. So, Al, let's go back to a recommendation or two. We have the Boordy Vineyards far from where we sit here in downtown Baltimore. They're just up in, I guess it's Moncton, right? Mm-hmm. That area. They've been around for quite a while. What do you like from that vineyard?
Well, first of all, Boordy is the godfather of all of our Maryland wineries. So they've been at it the longest, and we have so much respect for Rob DeFord and his family. They've been doing such a wonderful job, and it's the third generation now is moving in, which is really amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
They've been doing something with a grape called Albariño, which comes from Spain, that initially nobody in Maryland thought about growing Albariño, but they planted some on the suggestion of one of their winemakers who is Spanish, and they planted it out in Burkittsville, and it did really well. And every year they come along and they make an Albariño, and it's just sensational. And I can compare it to the ones that I've tasted from Spain. It's right in there. It's just fabulous. They make a number of reds, and they're reserve reds, reserve Cabernet, reserve Cab Franc. They're always really, really nice. So I have a lot of respect for their work.
Yeah, and Regina McCarthy, I know in my own case, I love to cook, and I am a regular visitor to the farmer's market under the expressway, the JFX farmer's market down in downtown Baltimore, and I go to the Waverly one occasionally. Of course, Waverly's open year-round, and the one downtown is open, April through almost Christmas. And I've gotten to know many of the farmers, many of the folks that I buy the same stuff from every week, and it really matters to me. I mean, I don't want to buy my green beans from anybody, other than my green bean guy, or I don't want to buy, my onions and my beets from anybody other than the people I always buy from week after week. As sort of impulse for developing relationships with the folks who are making your food, growing your food, does that carry over to the wine business
Absolutely.
As well?
I always say know your grower. With wine, especially with our local wineries, there's this beautiful opportunity to go to the winery, go to the vineyard, meet the people who are growing the grapes, meet the people who are making the wine, who are thinking about the development of the wine, who are thinking about what that wine is going to pair with. And we know that wine tastes best with the food from the region in which it's grown. So we're very lucky here in Maryland that our beautiful Chardonnays and Sauvignon Blancs go great with our oysters and crab cakes here in Maryland. So there's a beautiful symbiotic relationship there. One of the things that I love in my own job is that I get to work with a lot of great restaurants, and I get to see the farmers that they're working with, and then we get to work with those farmers. So it's a natural relationship. And I really encourage people to go out to the wineries to meet the people behind the wine, because they're accessible and they want to meet you and they want to get to know you. So it's a great opportunity.
And Al, is the process of making wine here in Maryland, is it vastly different from the way they make it in France or the way they make it in Spain or Australia? I mean, winemaking is winemaking, right?
Yeah, it is. What differs more than what happens in the cellars, what happens in the vineyards. And one of the interesting things about Maryland is that initially a lot of the people got some training in California, and the Californians taught them how to make wine the way they do in California, or grow the grapes the way they do in California. And those lessons were brought home here to Maryland, which isn't anything like California.
Yeah, so it doesn't fly.
That didn't fly. But what we did realize was that our growing conditions are far more like European growing conditions. I was in Piedmont last September, and I think that the growing conditions there are very similar to what we have here. So they had to readjust their thinking. And this is one of the things that Black Ankle did, was to start planting vineyards more in a European model. It gets very technical, but that's where the biggest differences are.
And with the different soil types, Regina, you know, you mentioned the mountainous areas or the, you know, the areas by the ocean, you know, the different soil types and stuff, do the techniques for growing have to differ even from winery to winery in the state of Maryland?
Absolutely. Even from within a vineyard at Doden, we have a 23-acre parcel with about 6 different blocks of grapes, and each block is farmed very differently. So,
Can you give us an example of what the differences would be?
Sure. It has to do, well, there's so many different things you can do, but things like how often you're growing the grass, what types of cover crops you're planting, how many leaves you're pulling around the clusters of grapes, how much actual fruit you're letting grow per vine. Those are just a couple of the things that we think about. But yeah, the little microclimates.
And that's wild. And that can differ from plot to plot on the same vineyard.
Plot to plot, variety to variety, and clone to clone of a particular variety.
Isn't that terrific? How about Leonardtown, Al? The port of Leonardtown, there's a thing called the Barbera Reserve.
Yeah, this is a very interesting winery. They're a cooperative. So you have a bunch of growers. I think they have about 10 or 12 growers. And they bring their grapes in to the winery, where Lauren Zimmerman, the very, very talented winemaker, takes them. And they trust her to make a really good wine. And they do. And ever since Lauren arrived several years ago, the quality level at Port of Leonardtown has just soared. So this year, and we knew this was coming. We knew it was coming because their progress has been notable. They won the Governor's Cup with their Reserve Barbera, which is a grape that's not widely grown in Maryland, but she has a grower who had a wonderful bunch of Barbera grapes that she brought in and made a sensational Barbera. And I was in Piedmont, which is where Barbera comes from, right after the Governor's Cup. And I can tell you, if I had brought that bottle to Piedmont, it would have fit right in.
Yeah.
So really, really tremendous accomplishment. In many respects, I regard that wine as my wine of the year, personally. Maybe not the very best wine I tasted, but certainly the most exciting one.
All right, the Barbera from Port of Leonardtown Vineyard. That's interesting. And Regina, are there any people making wine in the city of Baltimore?
You know, Charm City Mead Works is here, and that's a mead producer. And there are some cider producers as well. But beyond that, I don't know if anyone is making wine with grapes here in the city.
Are there some folks that are making wine that get their grapes from another source? I mean, that's not completely uncommon, right?
No, that's not uncommon here or really anywhere else. We have a lot of wineries who source from other commercial vineyards in the state of Maryland, for example. And then there are some wineries in downtown areas like in St. Michael's and in Olney who don't have a vineyard, obviously, in the middle of a downtown area, but will bring in grapes from local vineyards.
So if you do that, once you get to the point where you have the grapes, wherever you got them from, whether you got them from the, you know, outside your window or from 20 miles away, the process at that point is the same. So it doesn't matter that you're in the city of St. Michael or the city of Olney, right?
That's right.
Yeah, interesting. And Al, I mean, you talk about 2005 or so being a kind of tipping point.
Right, yeah.
So much of this has to do with PR perceptions, right? I mean, because I think there was a time maybe where the restaurants didn't want to have local wines on their menus because people just really preferred the wines from France and California and other places. What do you think accounts for that tipping point having taken place now, you know, almost 15 years ago? Is it a matter of just the press that Maryland wineries are getting?
Well, the tipping point, it means something other than I think what you're getting at. That was the proof that we could make great wine. But I think we all will admit that it's been a hard hard time getting restaurants to carry the Maryland wines, but they are getting more and more credibility. So, Regina, we are seeing more success in placing Maryland wines in the restaurants today.
Yeah, some 800, I guess, is what we're talking about. Yeah, that's a lot.
But there's still this kind of inferiority complex that a lot of Baltimoreans or Marylanders have. If it's from Maryland, it can't be that good. Well, it actually is. The other thing is that a lot of people have memories of how Maryland wine used to be 20 years ago or 25 years ago, and they haven't really tried any since then. So they're usually astonished. I always—
And you're just saying it's a whole lot better now than it was even 15 years ago.
Yeah. I always take Maryland wine when I'm invited out to dinner, and quite often I'll pour it blind and not tell people where it's from, and they're amazed that it's so good.
Yeah.
I think another contributing factor is the support that we've had on a legislative level. So in 2010, there was a big effort to modernize all of the laws in the state of Maryland, county to county, to really bring them up to modern day business practices so that wineries can have tables and chairs, wineries can offer tastes of wine and tours. So we've really come to a more mature level from a legislative perspective. But to that extent, the industry now is proving its worth. So there's 13,000 jobs, $43 million in wages, and $68 million in economic output generated by the state industry. And that's not to mention all the tourism dollars that are generated. So this is a real industry that's providing jobs and keeping green space green and bringing revenue into the state.
And are the wineries asking for tax subsidies or support, you know, public support for their private enterprises? So many other businesses do.
They don't ask for a lot. There's always little tweaks here and there from year to year in the state legislature. But generally, it's just an effort to do business.
Great. So, Al, we're out of time. Let me ask you to make one more recommendation for somebody looking for a good wine to try this weekend.
Okay. Crow's Sparkling Vidal. Crow is a lovely, lovely little winery on the Eastern Shore. They make a sparkling Vidal that will just knock your socks off.
All right. Crow's Sparkling Vidal. Well, Regina McCarthy, Al Spoehler, always good to see you. Thank you so much. And best of luck with the rest of Wine Month.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. One more plug. If you're out visiting wineries this month, tag or use the hashtag #WeAreMarylandWine, and you'll be entered for a drawing to win 2 passes for Decanter, which takes place in April.
There you go. Fabulous prizes. Nothing like them. Regina McCarthy is the author of Maryland Wine, A Full-Bodied History. Al Spoehler is a wine critic and longtime host of WIPR's Cellar Notes. Quick break. And when we return, Dr. Sharon Stowers from Harford Community College will join me to discuss that county's farm-to-table movement. But first, we want to take a minute to ask you for your support of your public radio. It's our spring membership campaign, and we'd love for you to be part of it. Here's Andy Beanstock to tell you how to make that happen.